if you're going to a Lutheran church, you should be hearing the name of Jesus more than the name of Martin Luther.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of the book Being Lutheran.
And I think that's really what Martin Luther would want. He made it quite clear that this faith is not to be based on him, but is to be based on Christ alone.
You can purchase Being Lutheran at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Being Lutheran, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. I remember observing this, this had to have been close to 20 years ago. I found myself a reluctant member, the trailing end of the baby boom generation, born there in 1964, the very last year that they were counting that large number of children born in the United States as the baby boom. And I observed at one point that baby boomers don't ever really start anything new. They just kind of take over the existing institutions and then pretty much ruin it. I was speaking at the time about the church, how when the baby boomers finally got a little, a little gravitas in the church, they went about systematically dismantling just about everything that was good about the American church. And you can see where we are today, thanks to the baby boomers, but they're not the only ones. In fact, our guest for the next half hour, Pastor Hans Feeney, has written about what he calls cultural parasites for the Federalist, the rise of the cultural parasites. He's creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. Hans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell us about what you call the brown-headed cowbird approach.
Yeah, I was reluctant to write about this simply because I wanted to be able to continue saying that I've never used anything that I learned in a college science class, and so I can no longer say that. So I took a class in college on the biology of birds because it didn't have a lab, and so I figured that would be easy. And one of the things I learned about in this class was the brown-headed cowbird, which is what they call an obligate brood parasite. So obligate basically indicating that the cowbird does not have the ability, doesn't know how to make nests. And so when it comes time for the cowbird mothers to lay their eggs, what they do is they will seek out nests that other birds have built, which are typically smaller birds whose eggs take a longer time to incubate. And they'll lay their eggs in those nests so that their eggs will hatch first, and the host mother will generally stop incubating her own eggs so that it's only the cowbird chick that's born. Or in other cases, there are other birds, the other obligate brood parasites that will kind of destroy the eggs that are already there. And so basically, this is how they further their own offspring. Is they avail themselves of the nest that some other bird has built. And overtake it, and then see to the building of their own house that way.
Where do you see this in our culture today?
Yeah, well, as I talk about in the article, you see a lot of this in sort of, you know, kind of Twitter hashtagtivism, whatever they call that stuff, the hashtag version of activism, where a few weeks ago, there's some hashtag going around saying to give Captain America a boyfriend, is the idea being that gay characters aren't overrepresented enough in media, and that, you know, Iceman and the X-Men is apparently now gay, and so, you know, there aren't enough characters that have been reconfigured to fit this point of the sexual revolution that we're at. And kind of before that, then it was people wanting, saying that Disney should make Princess or Queen Elsa from the Frozen film, make her a lesbian and give her a girlfriend and stuff like this. And you see similar things with, there's the new Ghostbusters movie that's been coming out. And which with each trailer looks worse than before, so looking pretty bad and pretty unfunny and terrible. So it's an all-female cast of Ghostbusters now, and kind of the defense of the film has not so much been that the movie is going to be good and that we don't need to worry about it, but the defense has basically just been, well, they're all women, so that's a good thing. So therefore, you shouldn't get upset if it's not as good as the Ghostbusters you remember growing up with. So similar thing with James Bond. There's, you know, people talking about how they think it would be great to have a female James Bond, and there's this kind of desire on the part of feminists or LGBT activists to, instead of creating their own stories, instead of basically building their own nests and creating their own worlds and furthering their causes in that fashion, I think we're seeing a lot of basically just cultural parasitic activity, where you have people trying to overtake movie franchises or comic book franchises or, you know, pre-existing stories and universes and fictional worlds, and trying to kind of plant their own eggs in there and repurpose them for their own purposes, and repurpose them in such a way that it's going to further their cause.
Is it because they lack the ability to create? Is it because they lack the will to create? Is it because it's easier to move into somebody else's space and redesign it to your own purposes? What's going on here?
I think it's really a combination of all of those things. And I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, we're not living in a world right now that really values innovation. And this isn't really a left-right thing so much as it is just sort of a cultural thing. You know, if you look at movie theaters nowadays, you go to your average movie theater, and almost everything that's in theaters is a remake of some kind. It's a, you know, comic book adaptation of some kind. There are very few original stories that are actually being made, and in large part that's because I don't think that there's necessarily a lack of quality writers and things of this in Hollywood or whatever it might be. I think in large part it's audiences are bored if they don't already know the story, you know, so they want characters they already know, and so that's what Hollywood is giving, and then that kind of cycle of supply and demand in that fashion basically ends up kind of stripping from our memory the value of new stories and the value of creating and true art. I think that's just kind of the case in general. That's sort of the spirit that's sort of hanging in the air, is that we've got at least in film, not so much in television, but in film there's kind of a cultural downturn in valuing creativity. And then on top of that, you have kind of my generation, so I'm sort of the tail end of Generation X leading into the millennial generation, so I get to criticize both of them, but it's easier to criticize the millennials. I think you've got a generation that grows up, that has grown up, and what they have seen held up as the most exemplary forms of societal change, these things have all been kind of parasitic examples. So it's, you know, it's been things, I point in the article to, you know, the feminist movement, the civil rights movement. And what these movements did was they didn't so much create new things. They didn't create new governments. They didn't create new civilizations. Rather, it was that people took hold of the reins that already existed. They took hold of the institutions that someone else created, and they kind of repurposed them in their own way to make the world better as they saw fit. And my generation very much grew up seeing these held up as the greatest examples in the world of what it meant to be a valuable contributor to society. So, you know, kind of the example I give in there is, my generation and younger certainly is very firmly convinced that it doesn't particularly matter, you know, how great the Declaration of Independence is, or how essential to the formation of American government Thomas Jefferson was. The fact that Thomas Jefferson owned slaves and perhaps had illicit relationships with his slaves, that makes him a worse person than you, because you have entered into the nest that Jefferson created, and you've made it more racially inclusive. So kind of the idea that not being entering into a country that was or living within a country that was founded with some problems with racism and things of this nature, the idea that you would transcend those issues and stop the nest from being racist is, in I think my generation's mind, a greater accomplishment than actually building the nest in the first place.
How does this go together with the, and we've noticed it in the last couple of years, but especially on college campuses, this kind of the sense of entitlement, not just to, it used to be kind of entitlement to, say, government largesse. Now it's entitlement to everything.
Yeah. It's a very, very kind of odd thing. The idea that, and I don't know. There are probably a lot of things that are causing this, but there is a very kind of odd sense of just this notion that everything belongs to you. So kind of going back to the whole Ghostbusters thing. Now I don't particularly care if you have a troupe of all lady Ghostbusters. I care if they're funny and if the movie looks funny and looks like a Ghostbusters movie as opposed to a Scooby-Doo movie. But there seems to be this kind of mentality amongst some in my generation that they're just entitled to this, that if we want to make the sort of the feminist version of Ghostbusters or the girl power version of Ghostbusters, we should be able to do it. And so it's kind of this, and I think there's also kind of this notion of it's like the reverse points of privilege. So in other words, if you're a male, you know, that's minus 10 points strength, and if you're straight, that's minus 10 points strength, and white and Christian, et cetera. So the idea that you had this, that you have a movie like Ghostbusters that was, you know, it was all men, three white men and one black man, well, that should therefore, by virtue of their male privilege and the privilege of those of men who want to keep Ghostbusters as a male enterprise, there's kind of this idea that, well, they shouldn't be able to defend themselves because their privilege should weaken them and prevent them from being able to basically complain enough to prevent this from happening. So I think there's kind of this mindset, especially in younger people, that if you're trying to take over an institution that's not embracing whatever you think is the repressed person in the environment, that you should just be able to overtake it. That they shouldn't be allowed to defend themselves and kind of fight back. And so I think that there is a kind of just sort of an odd, yeah, as you say, an odd sense of entitlement that we should be able to take this over, and that no one should be able to say anything about it. You know, where I'm much more of the mindset, that when things are created, they don't belong to the audience in that sense. I mean, they belong to you in sort of a sense of nostalgia, but the idea that that someone who just has enough money to kind of buy the film rights for Ghostbusters can come along and make it into his own. Make it into his own version of it, make it into the, you know, to the lady version of it or whatever. It's an idea I certainly don't subscribe to. I like the idea that the treasures of my youth remain as such.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about cultural parasites on this Tuesday, June the 21st. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. He says, by the way, it also has happened in the church. We'll find out how after this. Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky, and St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about cultural parasites. Hans, you actually say that Christians, even conservative Christians, have adopted the parasitic approach in the past. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think what you've seen a lot of is in recent decades, Christians, I think, will oftentimes find that their kids are getting into secular forms of entertainment, whether it's film or music or things of this nature, and they want to offer their kids an alternative, but the reality is, just as a general piece of advice, if you want your kids to not listen to secular music that's negative and nasty and profane and things of this nature, one of the best things you can do is actually teach them music and teach them music lessons and get them actually playing instruments. And once they learn the beauty of music, they'll just get bored with really awful stuff that's typically on the radio. And it's sort of like the way you prevent your kids from binge drinking is teach them to like really good beer, and then they won't drink a whole bunch of Natty Light at keg parties in college. Works. It's a wonderful approach to things. Nonetheless, I think what sort of happens in these scenarios is parents say, well, boy, it would be nice to have something to kind of swap out sort of Indiana Jones style. And so people started kind of producing this type of stuff for them. So you had Christian-themed cartoon shows, which were kind of highly moralistic, stuff like VeggieTales, and there's been some other stuff. VeggieTales is, I think, actually done fairly well. But for, those of us who grew up with tapes just being popped in the VCR at VBS or things of this nature, there's some pretty kind of awful stuff out there. And then likewise, kind of the rise of contemporary Christian music was this same type of thing, where instead of Christians really valuing the tradition of creating and being, and in particular being the ones who drove culture and the ones who were really setting the trends within the culture of music and artwork and things of this nature, instead of doing that, Christians just got in the habit of aping culture because it was a lot easier. And it was learning three chords on the guitar was much simpler than becoming acquainted with the works of Bach and things of that nature. And so what ended up happening was parents just sort of started saying, okay, well, let's give our kids the Christian version of something. Let's give them the Christian version of rock music or the Christian version of rap. Let's give them the Christian version of Saturday morning cartoons. Let's give them the Christian version of movies and TV shows and things of this nature. And what ended up happening was instead of giving kids, their children, the best treasures that Christendom has provided in these various arenas, it just kind of taught Christians to sort of accept mediocrity and to not aspire to more. To kind of give probably one of the best examples of this I could give, when I was in college, the band Creed was becoming very popular, and I didn't much care for them. But I was talking to a girl who was in a class of mine. She was a kind of friend of mine and a fellow Christian. And she asked me if I listened to Creed, and I said, no, I didn't really like them. She asked why I didn't listen to them. And I said, well, I just don't think they're very good. And her response was very interesting. She didn't argue with me about whether they were good at music or not. Her response was, well, yeah, but a lot of their songs have Christian themes. So in other words, well, it doesn't matter if they're not good. You should still like, so it doesn't matter if it's garbage. It's our garbage. It's Christian garbage. So therefore, you should like it. And which I think is very similar to what we're kind of seeing with the response to this Ghostbusters movie that's coming out, is where you basically have a bunch of people say they're not even arguing that it's good. They're not even arguing that it's funny or that it deserves to be compared to the original film. Their response is basically, yeah, but it has girls in it. It's girl power Ghostbusters. So we should all have to like it, even though it's not good, because it furthers our cause. And I think this kind of reflects a similar approach in this kind of parasitic thing where you land in this nest and you go, oh, this nest is terrible. This is no good. This is artistically, this is just a mess. And yet people's response is, yeah, but it's our mess now. We Christianized it. And they act as though creating the Christian version of something or sort of taking a secular model and Christianizing it, they act as though that is somehow an accomplishment in and of itself, and that it's even greater than actually creating kind of from the ground up our own artwork and our own music and our own literature and things of this nature.
Tom listens in Texas. He has a question. He says, isn't this exactly what we see in groups like Transforming Churches Network? Rather than start a church with the theology of mission they espouse, they rather take over a vital church, reallocate their history, wealth, and other assets. I don't know if that goes to parasitism or cannibalism. What do you think, Hans?
Yeah, well, I don't know Transforming Churches Network terribly well, so I wouldn't want to comment on that one way or another. I mean, I think speaking kind of more generally, I think this is certainly something that you see in liberal Protestantism. I mean, the reality is, how many liberal church bodies have been built from the ground up? How many, you know, when you find churches that are, you know, hoisting the rainbow flag, and you know, very universalistic in their theology, and have embraced every aspect of secular humanism or whatever you want to call it, and embraced all of this kind of gender insanity and whatnot, all of those. Church, they didn't build those churches. Those altars were most often built by faithful Christians, you know, 120, 150 years ago. The reality is that the liberals just managed to take over pre-existing theological institutions because they didn't know how to build from the ground up. All they could figure out how to do was just take the things that other people had created and then kind of bully people into not fighting back. I mean, there's probably something similar, I'd imagine, that you'd see kind of in the history of church growth, which is that you'd have congregations that where a pastor or whoever is kind of driving things in the congregation will decide this is the new form of ministry we're going to do, this is the new form of worship we're going to do, but we're going to do it in a way where we're just kind of building from the ground up. Or rather than building from the ground up, we're just going to simply take over the things that are already there and repurpose them for our own to kind of further our own agenda.
So it sounds as though whether it's the culture of the church or the culture of the culture, the goal here to avoid this ourselves is to seriously consider the task before us to actually build, to create, as you say, to make rather than take.
Right. Yeah, I think I think that this is just kind of culturally speaking, this is not a good place for us to be. And I say in the article that you tend to sort of ape the other side's methodologies in kind of cultural warfare. And so in a lot of sense, this is probably why this stuff has happened, is that, secularists will take over kind of Christian-based institutions or things that came out of a Christian worldview and try and rework them to further their own cause. And then Christians will kind of respond by trying to take over the repurposed liberal thing and trying to make it work for themselves. And really all this does is it just makes everyone dumber. It causes everyone to accept less, to not strive to offer the world something greater, and I think it would just be a much better thing if everyone could just kind of see that there's far more value in trying to create something new. So you know, if you're a person who really really thinks that the most important thing in the world is for young girls to know that they can also do non-existent science fiction jobs, well, then tell your own story. Leave the Ghostbusters be and do what people have done in the past and make your own universe, make your own thing that needs, create your own story that needs to be told. And in the same way with Christians, look, if you're, like as I was saying before, if your kids are interested in lousy music, have them listen to Bach, have them listen to the great Christian composers. Have them learn instruments, learn how to write music, learn how to create and make things rather than just trying to give them the Christian version of something secular, which never ends up being terribly valuable and certainly isn't going to be remembered throughout history.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church at Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos that he made himself called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled The Rise of Cultural Parasites. We'll post a link to it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Tom Baker teaching a Sunday school lesson, as we do every week. Jesus teaches his disciples to pray. When they ask to be taught to pray, he gives them an actual prayer. It's not a how-to as much as it is, here's the prayer. It's we call it the Lord's Prayer. Pray this way. We'll find out why after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.